finer example of that than Try and Catch a Rolling, which obviously was a set opener, which was, you know, the old Yardbirds, you know, Johnny Burnett, Stomper. And when you watch that, and again, I've got vivid memories of being on the side of the stage, watching Jimmy put his foot on the wah-wah pedal, literally feet from me, and the audience going crazy.
Say what? Ho, this is Brian. Call me the hipster dame on a train gardener, coming to you from Ramblin' Towers Galley Studios in scenic and toasty warm Hespler, Ontario. You are listening to Ramblin' Radio, episode 101 on the Off the Cuff Podcasting Network. Ramblin' Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to RambleOnRadio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links mentioned during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. If you go to iTunes, if you're in iTunes, for any reason, you're grabbing that Kanye West Bohemian Rhapsody travesty, just Google Ramble On Radio, go over, leave a review. Give a star or 3 stars or 5 stars, preferably 5 stars, but that's your call. And just a review, and the review is... Don't worry about hurt my feelings, because I actually never see these things. But the review, the more people review it, the more notice it gets from the robots, the bots that control iTunes. So it kind of places it higher up the priority ladder. The same thing goes at Spreaker. You can listen at Spreaker, Spreaker.com. And if you go to Spreaker, follow Ramble On Radio. Follow me. And as well, that allows me, it gets a priority with iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio notices that. And I said last week I was going to submit episode 100 for Ramble Up for iHeartRadio, but I kind of posted it and then went to submit it. And you have to submit it as you're posting it. So this one, episode 101, is going to be submitted to iHeartRadio. So let's, fingers crossed, it's a good one. You can listen to, download, etc. Ramble On Radio on Podbean at I Am Brian Dammit. Also, check out Ramble On Radio on YouTube, where we have some prior episodes posted. As well, follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. Give you an idea of what's happening in this episode is that wonderful intro. Dave Lewis talking about the 1980 tour, that final tour. I mentioned it briefly last week. Dave was in Mannheim. He was standing side stage taking pictures. And I mentioned this last week a couple of times. I love my favorite Led Zeppelin book, I think, of all time. My two favorite Led Zeppelin books together, for certain, would be Led Zeppelin, Feather in the Wind, Over Europe, 1980, and go along with that, Dave Lewis's Nebworth book, which I can't quite recall the actual title, but it's, you know, Nebworth, and you go to his website, grab these books, they're great book, great first-person accounts of two phenomenal moments at the end of the Led Zeppelin career. And the thing about the 1980 tour is Dave got lots of up close access at the time, because he was doing his Tight But Loose magazine. So he got a chance to get pictures that nobody else got. And this was a really underreported tour. This is not like 75 or 73 rolling through the States and they had a photographer traveling with the show and all that stuff. This didn't have very little press attention, very little media attention. And the 1980 tour was really underplayed. Anyway, so that's Dave talking about being side stage, Jimmy Page opening the show, And Dave kind of says something like, just blown away, 10 feet away, you know, while Jimmy stomps on that wah-wah pedal to start Train Kept a Rollin'. And then we rolled off Train Kept a Rollin' from Mannheim, July 3rd, 1980. That is when Dave Lewis is side stage, and he has a picture in the book. I mentioned it when I was interviewing him, actually. From side stage, Jimmy Page standing on the Wawa in Mannheim. And you just have to assume that's the exact moment, right? Mannheim, July 3rd, there we are. And it says Train Kept a Rollin'. So we got a picture in the book. If you have Feather in the Wind, page 76, the picture is listed as Train Kept a Rollin', Mannheim, July 3rd, 1980. There's Jimmy just stomping on the Wawa, and we got a clip of that picture of Dave Lewis describing that picture, although he doesn't realize he's doing it, and the sound from that picture. Nice thing about the 1980s, it's a really underreported thing, and we're going to talk a lot about 1980 right now. But the nice thing about it is while it's really underreported, they recorded all the shows on the soundboard recording. And so, and all of them over the years have leaked. Now, it's been reported that they were stolen from Jimmy Page's house. Nobody knows for sure if that's true. But we do have actual soundboard audio of every single show. So we know what this tour sounds like. We know we can... And if you go to YouTube and Google a show, Google Led Zeppelin 1980, you'll find a whole show. They're all on YouTube as well. And if you Google a specific show, their bootlegs are there. And you can hear, how did they sound on a given night? And some nights they sounded great. At some moments they sounded great in some nights. And some nights they still, Jimmy was still on the sloppy side of things. But, 'twas what it was. And we're going to talk, like I say, I got another, when I had Dave on the phone last week on actually like the Mannheim date, the July 3rd, I think. I had him on July 3rd. So that's not just that you heard Dave Lewis describing standing at the side of the stage, taking the picture that's in his book, while the sound on, he's describing it 35 years to the day after it happened. So that was the intro. And we're going to outro with something from that same date. Probably will go to A Whole Lot of Love or something on July 3rd. What did they do on July 3rd? Communication Breakdown. So maybe we'll roll Rock and Roll at the end. They finished off with Rock and Roll. Maybe we'll do that. All right. A few things to go get to first. Mr. Plant, Robert, played a gig called Forest Live. Two of them actually this weekend. One in Gloucester. I can never get this quite right. And one in Staffordshire. And I know I'm saying that wrong. I know if you're English, it all just rolls into it. So it's like Staffordshire. And I know I want to say Gloucester, and it's Gloucester. So apologies for the pronunciations, but that's what us Canadians do. And the gigs are called Forest Live, and here's what I was kind of dug up on the interwebs. Forest Live hosts a series of special concerts in seven fabulous forest venues through England over the course of the summer. And two were this weekend, and Robert and the Sensational Space Shifters played on two of them. And on Saturday, opening up for Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters was a band called Y-Storm. And it's a group of preteen kids, comprised of students from, and God bless me, you think I can't get Gloucester right, Isgall O.M. Edwards School in Wales. Now, Isgall spelt Y-S-G-O-L, and you know those Welsh pronunciations. Probably Isabel or James or something. I have no idea how to actually pronounce it. But we'll go with Isabel. Joey Isabel O.M. Edwards, a school in Wales. And the children between the age of 10 and 11 and perform original material written by themselves in both English and Welsh. And the kids, two of the kids in the group are kids of Skin Tyson, Robert Plant's guitar player. So that's how they kind of got hooked into this, I suppose. And good for them. And that's what Robert was. So Robert and I have not heard how the what the set, I have not looked at the set list. I've not heard what he played, or I know one of my Facebook friends was going to one of the shows. But I hadn't heard. Haven't heard. I will say this: that sounds like a really cool setting to go see a band. And I'm guessing that there was a lot less rock and roll, and When the Levee Breaks, and a lot more Rain Song and Stolen Kiss and stuff like that. Just being in that environment, I'm guessing they toned it down a little, not toned it up, but who knows for sure. But it sounds like a really cool environment to see a band and to see Robert Plant. Sometimes something comes up and you go, I wish I could have gone to that. And that just looks like it would be a cool one. Okay, we're 2 weeks away, week and a half away, I guess, from the Presence In Through the Outdoor and Coda remasters. And they have finally released the final video. They do these unboxing videos, and the Coda box set video, unboxing video of the Super Deluxe Edition is now out, and it features three songs, including When the Levee Breaks. A little tiny snippet of it, and it's kind of a very different version of When the Levee Breaks. I'll tell you this right now. Very different version. You look forward to hearing that in 2 weeks, the full thing. And we will talk mucho about the box sets coming up in a couple of weeks. Once they're released, we'll, you know, that's August covered. Really. So I'm not gonna beat that horse to death, because I have another horse to beat to death today. And then they also released the Hot Song for Nowhere reference mix. And it's just kind of a remix of Hot Song for Nowhere. It's got a slight differences. It's got a different feel to it, different vibe to it. But I don't know if it's that. And I'm missing something here, because I thought they did the. I'm behind on that one by one, aren't I? They did. Never mind the Hot Song for Nowhere. That was the older one. Yeah. See, I took a quick peek at my phone, and apparently it didn't download it on my phone. Let's see if I got it here. Let's see. I think it was in the evening they actually released. In the evening, rough mix. Very different. A lot less echo. A lot cleaner vocals. I mentioned I saw Jason Bonham 2 months ago. And they did In the Evening. No. Yeah. Was it In the Evening? Yes, they did In the Evening. And I mentioned it was a very cool version. It was kind of relaxed and fun. And the lyrics were very clean on it. And this is much closer to the version they played. And I liked it a lot. And I do. I like this remix of In the Evening. And I think a lot of people are hopeful that what we're hearing from In Through the Outdoor will be very cleaned up, because it's a bit of a muddy album, very cleaned up versions. But it'll be interesting to. I think it's going to be one of the interesting box sets, as well as the Coda one is looking interesting. It must be said. Must be said. All right. So now we're going to get straight into it. Because we're already 15 minutes into this, and we haven't really, well, we did discuss the topic, but you know what I mean. So our topic is Tour Over Europe 80, between June 17th, 1980, and July 7th, 1980, Led Zeppelin toured in Europe, Germany, and Belgium, and Switzerland, and that sort of thing. And they did over those, 13, 20, 21 days, they did, I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 shows in 20, 21 days. That's rough. Could be 14. I could have miscounted here. So they rolled through Europe, very low key, 2 hour concerts, 2 and a bit hour concerts, not the 3.5-4 hours they were doing in 77 in the States. They took out No Dazed and Confused, no drum solo. 1980, things were changing in the music world, and being in Britain, they were changing a lot in Britain, and Led Zeppelin was very sensitive to this issue. Now, in the States here, I'm in Canada, but we were, much less was that changing. And Dave Lewis likes to point out, there was a new metal coming in, and bands like Journey and stuff like that were filling the void left by Led Zeppelin, etc. But the truth is, there was a whole space in the world for Led Zeppelin at that time. We loved them. We were looking for more. We were looking for a tour. But it's worth pointing out, the music industry had changed even on our side. The 13-minute song was gone. It was hard rock was poppier than it was through the 70s. And I've always, I'm of that age. Like, 1980, 1979, I turned 16. 1980 would be, I'm 17. I was still in high school. I was in high school when John Bonham died. I'm partial to those kind of pop metal, pop, hard rock pop things. And so I've always liked things like Hot Song for Nowhere and Candy Store Rock and The Ocean and Dancing Days and Out on the Tiles, which kind of got just a bit of bounce to them, a bit of groove to them, while at the same time being fairly heavy. So I'm okay with those. But a lot of Led Zeppelin purists from the earlier days, not so much, when you talk about In Through the Outdoor, the album, you gotta think of it in that context. They were trying to, and the Stones did Some Girls, which is very punky, and the odd choice in In Through the Outdoor was that Darlene and Warren Terry did not make it on to the album, because they probably were better fits in the time frame than was Carousel Ombre or T for One, or I'm Gonna Crawl. And they'd slide those in instead of Carousel Ombre or any of those numbers of song, and take a lot of the goo-goo stuff off in the evening. The cleaner version that was just released would have been a much more of-the-time album than it was. But nonetheless, for this tour, they cut down the songs. To a degree, they cut down the solos. They were playing the songs fairly straightforward. They started with every show with "Train Kept a Rollin'." "Train Kept a Rollin'" was also the song they started the shows. It's interesting, being the last tour, they didn't know it was the last tour. Nobody knew it was the last tour, but being that it was, they went back to the beginning. Their very first tours in '68 and '69, through the early part of '69, they started with "Train Kept a Rollin'," old Yardbird song, and they started these shows with "Train Kept a Rollin'" as well. So just kind of an oddball, interesting thing, I think. There's a bit of irony in that, if they knew this was their last tour, that would have been a neat way to kind of send it out. But so there's irony that they started this tour not knowing that, with the Johnny Burnett song called "Train Kept a Rollin'," which the Yardbirds also covered. The Jeff Beck era Yardbirds actually did it. So here's the shows. July 17 in Dortmund, Germany. And I'm not going to... I have the halls too. Westfalen Hall. But they're all in German, and I'm not going to try and challenge my German accent and stuff. So June 17th in Dortmund, Germany. June 18th in Cologne, Germany. June 20 in Brussels, Belgium. June 21st in Rotterdam, Holland. June 23rd in Bremen, Germany. June 24 in Hanover, Germany. June 26 in Vienna, Austria. June 27 in Nuremberg, Germany. June 29th in Zurich, Switzerland. June 30 in Frankfurt, Germany. July 2nd in Mannheim, Germany. July 3rd in Mannheim, Germany. July 5th in Munich. And July 7th in Berlin, Germany. So most of the shows were Germany, but they moved into Switzerland and Austria and Holland and Belgium, of course. And most the set list did not change much. In fact, prior to the encores, did not change at all over the show, course of the show. This is the set list from the first show. And everything, I'm going to tell you the set list going forward, but what happens is everything has changed. Consider this the base set list, and then whatever changes I mention are from this set list, okay? So don't try to keep track of every show, you know. Okay, so it goes, Train Kept Rolling, they opened with Nobody's Fault But Mine, Black Dog with Out in the Tiles intro, and Jimmy Page introduced Black Dog in every show. Good evening, and that sort of thing. In the Evening, Rain Song, Hot Dog, All My Love, Trampled Underfoot, Since I've Been Loving You, Achilles' Last Stand, White Summer, Black Mountainside, Cashmere, Stairway to Heaven. Every show that went that way. This is where it changes. Rock and Roll, Whole Lotta Love, Heartbreaker. And so there's various changes happening there at the those last three songs. So worth noting, they kind of did this. It's a starting opening with Train Kept Rolling, Nobody's Fault But Mine, Black Dog. And Train Kept Rolling, Nobody's Fault But Mine, Jimmy, and then they, you know, a breather. Jimmy introduces Black Dog, then Out in the Tiles intro, Black Dog. Then they go into In the Evening, Rain Song, Hot Dog, All My Love. So that's three out of four new all songs off of In Through the Outdoor, with Rain Song cramped in the middle. And Trampled Underfoot, Since I've Been Loving You, Achilles' Last Stand. So that's kind of the, almost the... the strut our stuff portion of the evening, right? John Paul Jones gets to kind of strut his keyboard playing on Trampled Underfoot, Jimmy on Since I've Been Loving You, and the whole band gets to strut a bit on Achilles. Then the only kind of big solo of the night is White Summer, Black Mountainside, followed by Cashmere, which they did it same as they did in 77 and at Nebworth, right? So Jimmy pulled out the blue and white Dan electro guitar. And if you don't know what that is, then you really, really do want Led Zepp gear by Jeff Strawman, which is coming. Slid that in on you, didn't I? So White Summer, Black Mountainside, Two Cashmere, not as two different pieces, but more or less. Mm-hmm. Then Stairway to Heaven, then the encore is Rock and Roll, Whole Lotta Love, Whole Lotta Love, Heartbreaker. Heartbreaker was in and out. So what's Whole Lotta Love, actually? Rock and Roll got moved around a lot. Okay, so second night, July 18th in Cologne, Germany. Whole Lotta Love or Heartbreaker gone, so it goes Stairway to Heaven, Rock and Roll, and Communication Breakdown to end the show. On the 20th in Brussels, no Heartbreaker, but the same show. Cashmere, Stairway to Heaven, Rock and Roll, Whole Lotta Love. No Heartbreaker. June 21st in Rotterdam, no Whole Lotta Love. And off the top of my head, I don't know if they threw Heartbreaker. They must have done Heartbreaker there. The same goes for June 21st in Rotterdam. So June 20th in Brussels, June 21st in Rotterdam. No Whole Lotta Love, both those. June 23rd in Bremen, Germany, no Whole Lotta Love or Heartbreaker. Ended with Communication Breakdown, same as they did on the second show. And since I mentioned no Heartbreaker, they must have done Heartbreaker in the Brussels and Rotterdam shows. June 23rd in Bremen, Germany, no Whole Lotta Love or Heartbreaker, ended with Communication Breakdown. June 24th in Hanover, no Whole Lotta Love or Heartbreaker, ended with Communication Breakdown. June 26th in Vienna, no Heartbreaker. June 27th in Nuremberg. On this show, we're going to go backwards. Never mind that show. June 29th, Zurich, no Whole Lotta Love. June 30, 1980, it goes Stairway to Heaven, Rock and Roll, then Money, the old Beatles song featuring Phil Carson of Atlantic Records on bass, A Whole Lotta Love, including Let That Boy Boogie, Frankfurt Special. It's called the Frankfurt Special version of Whole Lotta Love, apparently. July 2nd in Mannheim, no Heartbreaker. July 3rd in Mannheim, after Stairway comes Communication Breakdown, then Rock and Roll. So that's a switch. It was intended to be Rock and Roll, then do whatever. So Communication Breakdown got stuck in between Stairway and Rock and Roll. July 5th, 1980, no Heartbreaker. And Simon Kirk of Bad Company, the drummer for Bad Company, joined the band on stage for a Whole Lotta Love. And July 7th in Berlin, no Heartbreaker. That's the way it works. Now, going backwards a bit. June 27, John Bonham was sick and passed out, food illness they called it, food poisoning I guess, and passed out three songs. So they did Train Crapper Roll, Nobody's Fault But Mine, and Black Dog with Out of the Tiles Intro. Then Bonham passed out and they canceled the rest of the show. So that's why I kind of passed by that. And as noted, Phil Carson and Simon Kirk in the latter parts joined the band on stage for songs. Interesting to me that Whole Lotta Love is in and out of the lineup. I mean, prior to this tour, Whole Lotta Love was always played. So it's interesting that it's an in and out, that it's an optional. I see Heartbreaker being an optional or Communication Breakdown. But Whole Lotta Love being optional is interesting, to say the least. So that's kind of the 1980 tour. There's very little press on this. There's very little. If you're going to research it, you wind up with Dave Lewis's book. I think the books on Robert Plant and stuff, you know, books that we've seen in the last while on Led Zeppelin, I think they, when they talk about 1980, they seem to just source this and the bootlegs. And the bootlegs are out there and available and are worth checking out because they sound good. They got good quality sound to them. And the band's playing well, and the band's kind of raw and clean, and sounding very good actually at times. And I really like these 1980 shows. There's no kind of skip it songs. There's no bathroom break songs. It's much more concentrated. This is the show. This is us playing. Boom, song, 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 song. Go, go, go. Which is more of the era. Anyway, here's Dave Lewis talking about his book and talking about the tour. He got to see five or six of the shows. Unfortunately, he had a job, so he had to manage what he could manage. He talks a fair bit about it. And this interview was on July 3rd, which again was 35 years after the Mannheim show. There would be two shows thereafter, Led Zeppelin's final show, and no, I'm not, I'm dismissing anything they did post John Bonham at this stage, but yes, Led Zeppelin's final show, with the original band, with John Bonham intact, happened on July 7, 1980, I'm recording this July 15, so 35 years ago, last Tuesday. So Dave Lewis, we're almost at the end of the tour when I'm talking to Dave, and we kind of talk about A, his book, and B, the tour, and commemorate the tour a little. So here's Dave Lewis, author of Tight But Loose, and an all-around good guy, talking about Led Zeppelin Over Europe 1980. All right, so I'm back with Dave Lewis. And and Dave was, we are, as we speak, Led Zeppelin was in the last week of their touring life, and Dave was at quite a few of those shows in 1980. It was 35 years ago this month. Was that, Dave?
Yeah, I was indeed. Again, I can't believe it's all of 35 years ago. When we were going through that process of a tour in Europe, a very different tour to what we had experienced before that, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I'm looking at a picture right now in your fabulous book. Everybody who doesn't have it, buy it. Led Zeppelin, Feather in the Wind, Over Europe, 1980. And 35 years ago today, this very day, July 3rd, you were side stage in Mannheim taking pictures.
Yeah, we were very lucky. I think it was a combination of the time. I mean, as I explained in the introduction of the book, which is actually on the Tiger's website, posting today. I've got an offer on the book at the minute, as it's 35 years ago. There's a special bargain offer as a bargain price, just to celebrate the fact that it's all those years ago. And, in my introduction, I do say, how on earth did I manage to secure a side stage spot watching Led Zeppelin in 1980, and it was a combination of fanatical enthusiasm, dedication to the cause, and being in the right place at the right time. And that had been nurtured by the fact that I had got Time of Loose up and running. It was up to issue 5 then, and as I've often said, Led Zeppelin didn't have fan clubs, didn't do anything like that. But when I took this idea to them in 1978, they were more than happy for me to get on with it. And not only that, they were happy to supply me with bits and pieces. I had good access to the Swansong Records office in Kings Road. I would frequently go there. The press office at the time, Unity McLean, was really helpful. Sometimes the guys would be in there, so you know, sometimes I'd see Robert in there or John. And it was just, I was just very lucky to be in the hubbub of what was going on. And I think because it was quite a relaxed era, where they, you know, they weren't running around the world, they were trying to work out what to do next. So I think there was, you know, there was quite a lot of thinking time going on. And there was a lot of thought process about what they were going to do after Nebworth. So when I went into the office in February, and one of the ideas was to go and tour around Europe and purposely not play in the UK, because I think, again, the press reaction to Nebworth had been mixed. You know, there was a change in atmosphere in terms of, you know, the cultural state of rock music in the UK. The new wave of heavy metal was coming through, bands like, you know, Iron Maiden, Motorhead, blah, blah, blah. There was a bit of a different audience, and some people were defecting away from Zeppelin because they had to wait too long or whatever. So I think they were in a bit of a quandary about what to do, but Europe had always served them well, even going back to 68 when they did the Scandinavia thing and some of the warm-ups that they'd done. Obviously did the warm-ups and Nebworth in Copenhagen. So the idea, I think, was to do a low-key tour, and the other thing was to go back and play smaller places, which they hadn't done for a number of years. So it was already pretty evident this was going to be something special, so I needed to be right out there. And if I was going to, you know, report on it, you know, for Time of Loose, it's very different now. You know, we would have had the set list within, well, as it was being played, you know, it would have been on YouTube in minutes, but didn't work like that then. So off we went, and, you know, my colleague Tom came with me, and we went to Cologne. I could only do the first show, and I had to come back due to some work commitments, but then I was okay for the following week, so we did Frankfurt, the two Mannheims, and Munich. Unfortunately, we then had to go back on the Sunday, and then they played Berlin on the Monday, and obviously, though we didn't know at the time, that was going to be the last ever Led Zeppelin gig. So I didn't quite see the last show, but I saw the last week of shows, and it was very positive. It was, you know, it was a very different Led Zeppelin than what we'd seen, certainly, you know, we talked about, you know, the peak of Earl's Court, and the sheer scale of Nebworth, which had carried them through. This time they were back to being a working rock and roll band, and that was no finer example of that than Train Kept a Rolling, which obviously was a set opener, which was, you know, the old Yardbirds, you know, Johnny Burnett, Stomper. And when you watch that, and again, I've got vivid memories of being on the side of the stage, watching Jimmy put his foot on the wah-wah pedal, literally feet from me, and the audience going crazy. And, you know, it was a moment that symbolised that there were still, you know, new places for Led Zeppelin to go, you know, and I think it would have, had they got to America, it would have opened up a whole new era. But what we were seeing, though we didn't know it at the time, was literally the final days of Led Zeppelin. So it's incredible to think back, when I was watching those shows, that was going to be it. There was never ever going to be an opportunity. So to say that I was in the right place at the right time, you know, is an understatement. And it was very exciting. But what's great about it is all these years later, in 2011, I did stop and then spent an amount of time to collate the book, because it was a very under covered tour, but, you know, very low key, with very little press. I mean, there was a few German press of Bravo magazine and a few others, Music Express, but in England there was only the Melody Maker, who came over on the Friday to do the Saturday gig in Munich. A guy called Steve Gett covered it. And that was about it, you know, so it was like, as I often say, it was, you know, the tour that Tom, you know, forgot almost. It was underplayed. And after a band that had massive coverage of Nebworth, and obviously the 77 tour going backwards to Earl's Court, you know, it was a different thing. These were new days, and they were going to be different days. But I still think the ethic and, you know, the musicianship was all there. you know, and all it needed was a spark and a continuity to get them well rehearsed. And I think the fact they played 14 nights over those 2 weeks, they felt like a working band again. In fact, when they got to Munich, which is a much bigger gig, which was at the Munich Stadium place, that felt like that had a bit of a feel of the big American shows. So I think they realised that they could do the bigger shows as well, as somewhere like Mannheim, which was like a bit of a 4,000-seater place under canvas. So I think, what I would say, when we entered Munich, there was a definite sense that it was getting bigger and it was feeling life again. It was, you know, it was gaining momentum. So I think had they rehearsed and gone to America in the fall, which obviously was the plan, it would have taken on a bigger stage and it would have taken with them the working ethics they'd got in Europe and put them back on a big stage, because they needed to play more gigs. It was no good doing two at Nebworth, or two warm-ups. They needed to be a working band again if they were going to reclaim their audience, because the audience was changing. As I said, in England, people were fed up with waiting. And I think in America, the likes of Van Halen and Rush were coming along and taking their audience. But I still think had they gone to America, they would have been as big as ever. And had there been another album in the following year, which was the plan, it would have been a whole new era. And, Led Zeppelin in the 1980s would have had a place. We're never, ever going to know, obviously, if that would have happened. So, again, Feather in the Wind, the book, I think stands as a testament to those final days. And I'm very pleased I was able to collate that book, and the fact we had all our pictures, which are very different pictures. They're not slick and professional, but they're right there on the spot. Very much the, antidote to the slickness of the Els Core photos. These are just shots that Tom and I had, or a few fans that were there, to represent Led Zeppelin at that time. And again, I think it's a very different view. If you say you line the two books up, the Els Core book, which obviously is a large format photo book, and then the Feather in the Wind, it shows the vastness of what happened in 4 years. And again, what I said earlier about it once was effortless, it suddenly became a big effort. And even to get them around Europe in 2 weeks, I think was a big effort. And it took a lot of preparation to do that, because they hadn't done it for so long. They just hadn't done gig to gig. Well, since the 77 tour, but even that was a very different scale. It was vast. I think the very fact that they allowed, what really was a couple of fans to sit on the, stand on the side of the stage, says everything about the low-key feel of it. That could have happened in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen in 77.
Those guys that you see in the film that are backstage trying to get backstage, and they're running down the long way. I think because I was a funnel of communication, which was very pro-Led Zeppelin, without a doubt, I was a fan. Criticism didn't come into it. I think they like that. I think they like that there was a connection. Don't forget, there's no internet, there's no nothing, there's no social media. It's a guy in his bedroom writing about Led Zeppelin and sending it out in a few adverts in Sounds. But that they like that. I know Peter Grant liked that, but there was something quaint and underplayed about it. And I think, I was lucky to be that funnel. And again, many years later when I look back, I really was privileged, it was an incredible thing to do. When I look at the pictures, even now, like you say, July the 3rd, I remember that day, it was 35 years ago, I remember that was yesterday. It did seem we were on the cusp of something very big again. It felt like Els Core was going to happen again in whatever way or form that took. But at the time, they were trying to get back to be a working band. And wasn't always perfect. There were nights where it was a bit off-key and here and there. But there again, Led Zeppelin was, never about, perfection. It often had to go through the rough patches to get to the real, great packages. And I'm sure they would agree with that, and their audience would too. But when he was good in Europe, it was still as good as it gets. And I can remember moments in Trampin' Under Foot and in Stairway when Robert still sang it as though he really meant it. There were moments of vast, vast majesty, which, would have happened again had they got to they got back to America in, the fall, which was what was the plan. So, yeah, it was an incredible privilege to be there. And again, looking back on it now, it's just incredible to look at the book and think, crikey, you know, that was the final days. And to see the final days was just, you know, incredible to look back and reminisce. So it's a great book. I think anyone who gets the book, you know, it was a very low key tour. Lots of people didn't get to see those shows. Lots of people got to see the American 77 tour, but much less the Europe tour. So for any fan that didn't really understand or didn't quite manage to see what it was all about, that book represented.
And I'm going through the book now. And you mentioned it's a very low-key tour, but that it was hard work for the band. But the one thing that strikes me about the book, and so many of your pictures, they look like they're really loose and having fun, actually. They just look like it's, you know, almost a relief to be on stage. Their body language is very loose, very low-key almost.
Yeah, well, I think the pressure was off because they weren't playing in England and they weren't playing in the US, so you're not going to get the likes of Rolling Stone turning up and giving it short, sharp shrift. Or you weren't going to get the cynicism of the British press, which at the time, don't forget, you know, punk rock had landed.
Oh, they hated them,
yeah. The heavy metal was in. You know, flares were out, dragon suits were out, thin ties and, you know, sharp trousers were in. And Led Zeppelin had to try and compete with that, and that to try and compute how they were going to fit into that. And I think what would have been great, and I think again some of Jimmy has hinted at, if they'd have gone and made a real rocky album, if they'd have gone back and made a real forceful album, you know. And I think Jimmy was keen to do that, you know, in a manner of presence, you know, as great as Into the Outdoor is, I think they needed to really slam home. I mean, in a way, instead of recorded a live album from the Europe tour and put it out very quickly, that would have been real, that would have been exciting. You know, let's just say that released the album, you know, say in the August, that would have been exciting. And that, you know, maybe looking back, that would have been a great thing to have done. Just say, this is Led Zeppelin live, this is what's happening now. This day and age, you can do it through the internet, you can, you know, you can download, you can do whatever. In those days, it had to be, you know, a physical product. So I think the instantness of that would have really hit home that they're having a great time. As you say, those pictures, they look relaxed. You know, there were some inner turmoil, I'm sure. Obviously, you know, the situation with John Bonham collapsing wasn't ideal, but, you know, I think he was homesick and stuff like that. You know, there were moments of low-keyness, I think, for them. But I think every time there was, they brought each other up and just got back out there. You know, and the moment Train Catalonia kicked in, for the next 2 hours, you know, they were just doing it because that is what they did. You know, to be a working band, as they had been in 73, if you say 7 years previous when they toured Europe in the March, which is one of the most intensive of Led Zeppelin tours in terms of, you know, the instrumental prowess, some of those nights are just amazing. You know, the Vienna and nights like that. You know, that was 7 years previous, and I think they were keen to get back to that. You know, and the excess was cut. There was no 20-minute days. There was no long Moby Dick. There was lots of lower key moments. There didn't need to be a long no quarter. You know, and I think that was working. And I think had they got to America, that would have transcended. You know, and they could have beat the set up. There was lots of stuff they could have done. I mean, they could have done. There was talk of Carousel Amber. There was talk of Rule of Leans. There was, you know, there was talk of those tracks that never really got down, you know, to rehearsing and playing live. So again, you know, a whole new era would have unfolded. And again, when you're looking at the book, you do sense, and I think you rightly said earlier, there was a looseness and an informality about it, which I think they were keen to exploit. You know, I think that's how things needed to be. And when they were going to America, don't forget, it was only going to be a short, sharp burst of gigs. It wasn't going to be a 44-day tour. They were going to go to do Chicago, Philadelphia. They were going to come back and then go out again. It was going to be about short burst of touring, because I think the long tours were long gone. I don't think Robert was going to put up with that anymore, or you know, or Jonesy. I think they were getting older. You know, times were changing. You know, and the family, you know, mattered more than it ever did. So, yeah, I mean, I think Feather in the Wind and the whole over Europe thing is a one-off, really. It didn't ever happen again, and I think that tour, as I say, is such a low-key tour. It is the tour that time forgot, and again, it was such a great thing to stop in 2011 and spend time to try and log it all and chronicle it, and I was very lucky enough to be there. And again, I know it's a book that Jimmy's seen and finds really interesting because it's different. There's that great shot of him, it's on page 93, of him speaking. When that was such a shock when he got up and introduced Black Dog. You know, those things didn't happen, and it was just great to be able to capture that. You know, and again, I think the whole of trying something, the whole ethic of trying something new is what they were doing. I haven't really done that for a long time. I think Nebworth, if you look at the set list of Nebworth, it's very much based on the 77 tour still. You've still got the long low quarter, you've still got the guitar solo, etc., with the bow. But this time they were trying something different. In effect, what it is Led Zeppelin trying to be a working rock and roll band again. And they succeeded on many nights. And when it was good, it was as good as it ever was. And it still had that same majesty of Earl's Court, but in a very different way. So there were new places for Led Zeppelin to go. And I think that book demonstrates that pictorially and certainly in the text. And it's very, you know, enthusiastic text, written by me when I was 22. And obviously, you know, a very enthusiastic Led Zeppelin fan, you know, and it was just great to be able to relay that. And I made no bones about the fact that he's wearing rose-tinted glasses, because that's the effect they had on their audience, and still do. You know, and I think we all know that it means so much to so many people. The thing I always say, Led Zeppelin is in the present tense. It always is, it always will be. And again, 35 years ago, when I was, you know, on side of Saved Mannheim, I never ever thought that would happen. I don't think anyone did. And no one would know that here we are all those years later and Jimmy's talking out the final three albums with unreleased material, and they're sounding better than ever, and they're sounding as fresh as they ever did. You know, that's the longevity of Led Zeppelin, which is one of the key things that brings everybody back, because however many times you hear it, however many times you talk about it, however many times you look at the pictures, it still means so much to so many people. Simple as.
And I'm going to leave it there, Dave. So the book is called...
Talk All Night.
Yeah.
Well, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. And obviously I look forward to hearing this. And you keep doing what you're doing. 100 shows up. Keep doing it, man. It's good.
Thanks, Dave. It's good to talk to you.
Okay.
And... for everybody listening, the book is called Led Zeppelin, Feather in the Wind, Over Europe 1980, tightbutloose.co.uk, and I will put a link up on the website. And that is Dave Lewis, Tight But Loose, Dave Tight But Loose Lewis. You know, the dog was getting very upset. Did you notice that? The dog, sorry about that. The technical details of the Dungeon Studio is it's right under our front door. And somebody was, I think my wife was up front talking to somebody at the time. And so the dog spins around and jumps around. It doesn't just bark, but does this whole physical thing. And you can hear the pounding on the roof of the dungeon. The floor to the dog, of course. And well, she was banging, so she wasn't just barking above our head, but she was in a whole other part of the house, really. I mean, a flight up, and I'm downstairs with the door closed, and we still heard their barking and the feet pounding, and that went on for a couple of minutes. So my apologies for that. My apologies to Dave for that. That's what happens. This is why in real radio, where they have actual budgets, they have a studio that's soundproofed and away from the world. And you can do what you do and without dog barking noises and pounding. So that's, I apologize for that, for everybody who had to listen to it. It hurt the interview a little. But otherwise, Dave did a great job explaining, walking you through those tours, those shows. And I want to thank him so much. He got it wrong at the end, the 100th episode, because by then... it was, of course, the 101st episode. We actually split his interview in two is what we did. So thanks to Dave Lewis for talking to me for so long. He was gracious and great, and it worked really well. And I'm tickled pink the 100th episode. If He made them easy. Made them easy. And if everything goes well, by the way, next week, I can beat Dave Lewis. I can beat it. I can do one better than Dave Lewis. As far as I know, that's what next week is going to happen. But I haven't got confirmation of the interview. I had it. I was told, yes, it'll happen. Pick a moment, pick a time, pick a day, sort of thing. And I did. And I have not got confirmation that that's okay. So I will do that. If I don't hear back by this weekend, I will get all over this one. Because I'm excited about it. And as well, I'm really pushing hard to get into the Toronto listening event, get a chance to ask a question of Jimmy Page next Tuesday. If I get in there, then I'll record everything I can in terms of the question and answer portion. And I'll do everything I can to post what I can of that. But so far, remarkably, nobody's answering my emails. And I'm not, and I did get, one place I did check with was the event, the venue. But the venue's owned by a technology company. And they have nothing to do with this. They're just renting out the room. And it's Warner Brother Records that have the, and Warner Brother Records has been less than cooperative with me. Again, they don't even answer their emails. They're way up here and they have nothing to do with me. Which will be remembered when they do come and ask for a favor. You know, when they want something pushed, the answer will be no. But that's another story for another day. It'll come, and I'll let you know when it comes. But yeah, so I'm trying hard to get in there. I'm pushing in buttons at Warner Brothers, and nobody's responding. And the guy from the venue actually sent my email along to Warner Brothers, so maybe somebody there will go, okay, let's trying a variety of things on that front, and I'll go from that. So today, speaking of Dave Lewis, Tight But Loose, and I'm holding it up to the microphone like an idiot. Tight But Loose number 39 showed up in my mailbox today. I have not had a chance to go through it. But as I was listening to the interview, I was nosing through it. I was kind of flipping through it. And it looks good. Looks like a really good one. It's got the Jimmy Page interview, companion disc conversations, he calls it. Instead of what I would call it would be, holy effing Jesus, I got a Jimmy Page interview again. That would be the title I would give it. Dave is lower key than me, I guess, and goes with TBL exclusive companion disc conversations. And he has a listen to the entire companion disc. Everybody else got their little review, their little listening event. Where they did about 6 or 8 songs. Dave got to listen to the whole 3 remasters, the mixes. He's got conversation on all of them. He's got a review of every single song. Plus he's got the interview. Plus he's got the usual 10 other things going on. So good for David Lewis. I will review this next week or the week after. I'll try to get to it next week. I've not had a chance to read it, but it's in my mailbox today. If you don't subscribe to Tight But Loose, it is tightbutloose.co.uk. Get over there. You want to buy this book, this magazine, and you want to get the Feather in the Wind plus the Nebworth books from Dave. It's really worth doing. It just is. And I'm gonna close it off now with same thing I did last week that I mentioned I've never actually done before. I did want to mention Jimmy's. There's a few interviews out there with Jimmy already. He's started making the rounds. Yes, the Toronto event is coming up. He's also got a New York event. He's done a Berlin event and a Paris event. So Jimmy's been making the rounds. There's lots of interviews out there, and I've not actually had a chance to sit and listen to them all. I apologize for that. I will try in the next week to kind of get on some of those, and maybe we'll have a conversation about what Jimmy has been saying. One of the things he has been saying, however, is that he's going to do new music next year. He's going to, very soon for the new music. He wants to be seen with a guitar in his hand. He plans to have new music out there, blah, 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 blah. And that's just, look, this, Jimmy says this all the time. Take it with a grain of salt. I hope he does. I doubt it. No expectations. But he's doing the tours, he's doing the rounds. Keep your eye open, and I will try and post as much as I can on Ramble on Radio when it comes to this sort of thing as well. And here is Mannheim, July 3rd, 1980. Dave Lewis, side stage. We opened the show with Train Kept a Rollin', Jimmy Page hitting on that wah-wah. Let's close it off with Rock and Roll. This is how they finished the night. Mannheim, July 3rd, Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin. And thanks for listening. Oh, gotta do my shtick, right? Gotta do my shtick. That's it for Ramble on Radio episode 101. Check RambleOnRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes, listen on Spreaker, and check it out at Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio episode 101. Here is Rock and Roll from Mannheim, July 3rd, 1980.